The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Brought to you by Standard Life, a life savings company for your journey to and through retirement.
With me this morning is Rona Mahoney, consultant, obstetrician and gynecologist and former master of the National Maternity Hospital, and Kevin Doyle, group head of news at Media House Ireland, otherwise known as the Irish and Sunday Independent and all that live within that big broad stable. You're still standing over the exploding trees, Kevin. That's a real...
Well, Anton, apparently you've been corrected. So, you know, the listeners can't be wrong, can they?
Isn't that amazing that it can get actually cold enough that trees burst?
I've never seen it, I have to admit.
No, once it gets to the temperatures where trees explode, stay indoors, I think is the basic rule. There is, not that that is an unimportant story, it is obviously of significance to the people near the trees, but those trees are in the States. The housing story on the front page of your paper is much closer to home. This is an interesting one. 67 apartments, what have been built now for quite some time, are lying empty while people are in a queue saying we would more than happily move in, but can't.
Yeah, this is the second Saturday in a row, Anton, that we've led on a housing story that's not policy-based, but is just based in ridiculousness, is the truth. So last weekend, it was about apartments overlooking the Phoenix Park that have been lying empty for 18 months because they needed to be signed up on fire safety regulations, and they were obviously paid for by the taxpayer. These are another 67 apartments, two blocks, one in Rathfarnham, one in Cherrywood. Finished for a year, paid for by the taxpayer, worth, we estimate, around 35 million if they were out on the open market. But of course, they're not on the open market. If they were on the open market, there'd be people living in them. But because it's been done through the state, they lie empty. Some families have been offered apartments. Can you imagine the day you get offered your apartment and you think, wow, thank God, offers withdrawn, taken back off them now after a year. And the council floundering to find something else for them.
And these are brand spanking new, ready to go. The families could sit outside and point and say, that was meant to be our one.
Yeah, that's where it's at. And basically, as best we can discover, it's tied up in paperwork around legal and building documentation that has to be signed off. I mean, South County Dublin County Council describing it as extraordinary delays. But it's a symptom, I think, of the problem that we have an emergency. And yet things like this can happen. You imagine there's a team of lawyers somewhere in the Department of Housing that after 6 months would say, lads, we need to get involved here, sort this out. We can't afford to leave. You know, if it's 67 apartments, it doesn't sound like a huge number. But if you have three or four people, kids, families, couples living in each of those apartments, now that's hundreds of people who have a nice new apartment with a good living standard.
But it does go to that thing of the level of alacrity with which the crisis is being approached. If this can sit idle without it becoming a political issue, without somebody's head rolling of it, what does it say about the total approach to the problem?
And that's exactly it. Maybe we need a housing czar, do we? somebody who can bang heads and sort these things out, because, you know, these are probably, you could call them in the newspaper world, a case study. But I suspect that these are just a couple that we've become aware of, and that this sort of thing is happening all over the country. It might be five apartments somewhere else. It might be five houses in some other county. But they all add up and it just doesn't make sense.
And it's also significant state buildings. I mean, it's one of the things that your paper has done a fair bit of work on, which is pointing to large state-owned premises that have been lying vacant. I mean, the hospital in the former Royal, as it was the Ioneer Hospital, the one on Baggot Street,
yeah,
that's been lying vacant now for decades. And it is a huge, big edifice that you would have thought could have been turned into apartments and nothing done.
No, and we have all these policies about living over the shop, about vacant buildings, about vacant land taxes. And everything just seems to happen too slow. I mean, we could talk all day about the causes of the housing crisis, but I think what we're trying to get at here is the effects of it. So if you take those 67 houses and the families who might move in there, who, okay, some of them might be in different rented accommodation or whatever and getting on with life while they're waiting, others will have put their lives on hold. So, you know, if you thought you were going to one of these apartments and if you have small kids, well, presumably you're looking at the schools in this exact area. You're thinking about your commute from this area and you're starting to build your life around this area. And now you're not necessarily getting your apartment in this area. So you have to put your life on hold, and that affects people in lots of ways.
It must be something you're seeing a lot with your patients, Rhoda, because at exactly the age that they are coming into you is the point at which they want to be saying, right, let us get settled somewhere. And a lot of
them
can't.
I mean, in human terms, this just comes right to the heart of our existence, where you live, having a safe place to be, setting up your family, setting up your home. And it's hurting so many people in so many ways. And And it's hurting us in a, as a country. You know, we're becoming less attractive, you know, in terms of a place for employment. It's a fundamental issue throughout almost every element of Irish life. And it's a big issue for our staff as well, remember, who are commuting long distances every single day to try to get to work. And then, you know, coming out after a 12-hour shift, driving an hour and a half, 2 hours, because they cannot afford to live near Dublin. And I mean, we've been talking about housing for so long in this country. It is meant to be, you know, a primary aspiration of political life. And the other thing is, you know, sometimes we know things don't happen that should happen, but politically they'll happen if that's a politically good thing. Here we have something that is a massive political football, like it's a massive own goal not to be building houses. And we have these stories coming out all the time. But, you know,
although we have a long history of things where they appear to be evident open goals. I mean, like the Children's Hospital, like the shifting of the National Maternity Hospital. I mean, the length of time from the point at which that was decided as a good plan to it actually starting a process.
I mean, there's so many different reasons and so many different layers in Irish life. And, you know, I think that's a real difficulty with decision making. Like when you look at healthcare, I mean, how many different layers do you have to go through? You've got Department of Health, you've got HSE, you've got the National Women and Infants Health Programme, you've got the regional health authorities that are just now emerging from the groups. So how on earth do you get a decision made? And I think it's a similar concept in housing, because you have all these legal challenges, you have all these different organisations that have to sign off, you've got all the planning stuff. So the actual ability to do something. But as we learn, unfortunately, you know, we learn very hard lessons when we stop doing things and providing vital infrastructure for people to live. Because the whole point about being in a country is to be able to live.
Text saying, crocked armours, cars, empty homes, wasted money on bus shelter. Seems like public servants are to blame, but never get blamed or held accountable. I'm not sure that it lives entirely with public servants. It strikes me as multi-layered bureaucracy with nobody actually driving much.
I would say, and I have long held the theory, but I'm not suggesting we enter an authoritarian regime or anything like that. We'll get on to it in a minute. But
a benign dictatorship.
But, yeah, but there is an element of 5-year government terms, I think, creates part of the problem here. Because every government gets elected and is looking at the next election. So even if you take things like the Metro, which is in the papers this weekend as well, you know, the minister who starts that will probably not be the minister doing the first ride on the Metro and ringing the bell and cutting the tape. So the minister who does it now is the minister who's going to get the grief for the planning disputes, for paying 30 million for 10 houses in South Dublin, for digging up roads, for closing down parts of the city. And that's what the minister gets right now. And it'll be somebody else in 10 years' time, hopefully, if it ever happens, who'll get the credit. It's a bit like that with the maternity hospital. It's a bit like that. Now, it'll be interesting to see who shows up for the opening of the children's hospital, because I'm not sure any of them necessarily want to be getting the credit for that. But that's part of the problem, I think.
It's interesting, the guy, there's a book that I was very impacted by, which is called How Big Things Get Done, that looks at big infrastructural projects. And it said that the other corollary problem with that is that it incentivizes the minister or the official whose job it is to announce it to not sweat the budget too much, because, you know, I will not be round here when the final checks have to be. So if I overshoot or undershoot in my estimation, who cares? It's not my problem.
Yeah, it's very hard to be the inspirational minister who gets the credit in the history books.
Yeah, and I agree, Kevin, because everyone has to get re-elected. So everyone's going for the short-term fix. And of course, real stuff like infrastructure does take time. At the end of the day, it has to be planned properly. The checks and balances do have to be there. So it can be difficult to achieve that overnight. So we do also have to have realistic expectation of what is possible. But I just think we need to have more straightforward conversation about what actually are the real barriers. And what are our resources? What are the things in our society that we can bring together that actually make these things happen? And maybe a little roadmap where we check in every now and then and say, okay, well, we said we'd do this. So realistic goals, realistic expectation, but then to actually really commit to those and do something.
Now, on the topic of authoritarian regimes that Kevin wants to create in Ireland, this is, I assume, emulating what we're seeing across the water. The Davos meeting was extraordinary. We're going to talk about that a bit later in the programme. But it has created this sort of situation of what does the EU do? We have reports of Christine Lagarde walking out of one of the presentations at Davos. And fairly soon, Micheál Martin is going to be sent across with his bowl of shamrock to go woo President Trump. Your own paper, Kevin, a lot of analysis suggesting that this is going to be about as diplomatically tricky as it gets.
Yeah, now obviously I was encouraging a benign dictatorship. I'm not sure
that's
not what this is. This is something I think a little bit more threatening. I think there's quite a bit of analysis in some of the papers I'll write this morning looking at the way Simon Harris and Micheál Martin have been talking about this week, particularly the Board of Peace, and should Ireland obviously got its invitation to join it. On one hand, you have Simon Harris from the safety of the Department of Finance on Merrion Street saying we shouldn't go anywhere near it and it's a crazy idea. And then Micheál Martin being far, far more diplomatic. So I think what
now,
we're...
Now, remind us, the Board of Peace is not something one gets to join just thanks to the invitation. This comes at a cost.
Oh, yeah, but it's only $1 billion. You'd only get a third of a children's hospital for that, sure. Bargain. So, yeah, you can pay $1 billion to Donald Trump, who is the chairman and all-powerful leader of the Board of Peace. You might get to meet with people like Belarus's Lukashenko, you know, the Turkish president, a lot of African leaders. Putin hasn't decided yet, so he may or may not. I mean, maybe you hold off and don't pay your money till you know the full guest list. You know, it's like going to one of these kind of celebrity parties where you have to pay loads of money to get a ticket. You kind of want to know who's going to show up.
Well, we know that Canada is now uninvited. Mark Carney got reverse invited there 2 days ago because he was mean to him at Davos, or mean adjacent to him at Davos.
And Simon Harris, I think, is trying to emulate that. He's probably seen some of the social media reaction that Mark Carney has got, and he's kind of become the new momentary saviour of the world. And Simon Harris is going for that, whereas Micheál Martin is getting a little bit of criticism because he's kind of walking the line. And if you're Micheál Martin, that's probably sensible, because he doesn't want to end up being Mark Carney, who's then getting tweeted about. And he has to go into the White House in 6 weeks' time. And God knows what him and Trump are going to talk about. I presume Trump will say, you're going to join my Board of Peace? You might do him a bargain, you know, 50% off or something. And so Micheál Martin faces an uncomfortable few weeks, I think, in the lead up to that, because as all this tension grows, he doesn't want to become the whipping boy for the EU when he shows up to get embarrassed on all the American networks.
At what point, I mean, we've had this now for a couple of the presidential visits, but that balance between not wishing to risk Ireland's economic interests and also owning a spine, does there come a point where Micheál Martin politically does better from actually standing up to some degree to the American regime?
I mean, I think there's loads of layers again, because obviously there's the European dimension. So we look at the Board of Peace so far, not so many Europeans signing up. I think Hungary's in there, but I'm not sure if they would be necessarily representative of the main sort of EU thought process.
And France saying that they won't take part.
And France have been really clear. And actually Keith Starmer suddenly, you know, having been like Trump's greatest fan, suddenly I think that relationship, you know, he could get uninvited as well if he keeps going in a similar vein, you know.
Oh, this was because this was the comment about NATO troops,
exactly,
wasn't it?
So, you know, Starmer's beginning to rattle the cage a little bit. So, I mean, it would be great for Ireland if we could get ourselves uninvited maybe before that invitation comes. But I think for Micheál Martin, it will be a difficult line to tread. But I think it's fascinating that the European take on that this is going to be an alternative United Nations. And I think Putin's presence on this board makes it really difficult from a European perspective, and indeed from Micheál Martin's perspective, to even have to have a conversation about the Board of Peace.
But the other thing is, you would have thought as well that in any other era of political life, you would say, well, okay, the critical issue will be NATO and Greenland and possibly tariff war and all the rest of it. But in a 6 week period, it could be almost anything. Who knows what the next manufactured crisis will be that Micheál Martin will be sitting there representing Europe in.
Absolutely. But the big thing with the Board of Peace is we don't quite know what its terms of reference are, and we don't know exactly yet what the whole structure is going to be, how it's going to do its business. So joining something, I think it would be pretty risky business to join just now. I think you're right. You want to see who else is on it.
Donald Trump doesn't strike me as a terms of reference man. I wouldn't say he's much into writing terms of reference.
Or he writes them on a daily basis, maybe. Absolutely. Yeah. But yeah.
Well, there's news at home from the Trump side of things, from the American side of things, about further issues in Minnesota with there's very stark coverage and descriptions of including probably the most egregious, a 5-year-old child suspected to be a child of illegal immigrants picked up in school and brought to the family home to knock on the door to effectively try to bait his parents out so they could be arrested by masked armed federal agents.
Yeah, and like everything in America, this is obviously disputed versions of events, but this is the story of a little boy, Liam Ramos, who allegedly, as you say, used as bait. J.D. Vance intervenes and claims that the language, like J.D. Vance has given quite a when you listen to it, you go, okay, that's a plausible explanation. But even if the language is very crude, talking about his father was an alien. And when ICE arrived at the door, he ran. So what could ICE do? Only they weren't going to leave the 5-year-old boy there in minus 25 degree temperatures on his own. But that doesn't really seem to be the reality of what's happening. But that's one example. It's really kicking off this weekend there. Mm-hmm. I mean, the strange things that have happened, like not having an investigation, a federal investigation into the death of Rene Good shot. Like, how does any police officer shoot someone dead and not have an investigation? The investigation can find that he feared for his life and was justified in shooting, but you still have to have the investigation, and then people can argue over how the outcome of it. Then you have protests last night, which saw a whole load of clergymen arrested near the airport, who were protesting about the airlines that have been taking part in deportations. So that's more of it. There's been an economic blackout where hundreds of businesses have closed. There are thousands of people on the street in minus 20, 25 degree temperatures. It just all seems completely out of hand.
Yeah.
Is it coincidence that it is happening in Minnesota, which would be, which is Tim Walz's state? I think they
come at the Democrats. It suits them that it's a Democratic state. They don't want it to happen in I don't think you'll see the same scenes in a Republican state where you would have a Republican governor. It just seems to be very targeted. They seem to be stirring it up, and they're using it as an example. You know, send in the troops. I mean, yeah, it's toy soldier stuff, really. But
that's probably the part that is because whenever it is challenged, the argument is, well, we are enforcing immigration law, to which the answer, well, that is fine and good. But there is the manner in which one does it. Having armed federal masked agents effectively demanding papers from people, it's very redolent of bleak times in Europe.
The irony. So you have Trump setting up his Board of Peace, you know, which is about to try and, you know, sort out a situation that's gone on for decades that is highly complex. I mean, the history of the Middle East, you know, it's a really complex issue. And we probably don't even begin to understand the half of it. So to try to address that's extraordinary. And then so you have this, like, I am a peace loving, I want the Nobel Prize, I'm setting up my Board of Peace, it's going to be a rival UN nations, I'm going to sort out the whole world, we're all going to live happily ever after. And then at home, I am, you know, a 5-year-old boy and his father, and that kind of concept that maybe this 5-year-old boy has actually been used as bait to try and lure other relatives into the ICE trap. A woman has been shot dead, a woman who's making a protest. The idea of sending in police, and we see that they can act, they can kill people. I mean, this is extraordinarily unpeaceful. And the whole issue of immigration, the whole conversations around that, and the whole othering of people, the whole treatment of people, and the whole transaction of people. Even Greenland is like, I'm going to buy these people because it suits me, I'm just going to go and buy a country. Well, everything's a transaction. Everything is a deal. But we see here the human suffering and the absolutely appalling vista of civil rights, you know, issues coming back in.
And extraordinary unintended consequences. I mean, interesting quotes from people describing trying to run organizations where their staff are afraid to leave the house lest they get arrested.
Yeah, workers can't go to work because ICE are going around to schools, to workplaces, businesses, rounding up people, checking papers and stuff. And there's two things that strike me that just sums up the madness of it all. And these are two really simplistic things, but you sat here this time last Saturday morning, I was listening to you. You weren't discussing Trump's going to slap economic tariffs on the whole of Europe, part of Europe, and then all of Europe eventually. That wasn't even a thing this time last week. And imagine how much has happened in the interim on that. The other ridiculous thing, which CNN were reporting this morning, is that there's a big weather bomb coming in for a large part of America.
Exploding trees, Kevin.
Yes, there probably will be. And heavy snow, kind of very, very serious weather event. Homeland Security is telling the emergency agency, FEMA, not to use the word ICE in their messages to people because they fear it will be used for social media memes.
Because ICE now,
stands for something else. So if the emergency agency in America starts warning people about the dangers of ICE, that will become a thing. That's the level of ridiculousness.
But again, there's a madness with this whole storm. And then you think of Trump and his climate denying. I mean, you think of him last September in the UN, you know, the greatest con job ever perpetrated on the world. I mean, don't get away from this green stuff, your country will fail. And now America is facing an ice storm on many levels. It's just I mean, I was about to say you couldn't write this stuff, but the big danger, though, is everybody has political whiplash at this stage, and the capacity for institutions to carry on doing the work they're meant to be doing, I think, must be getting more challenging. And, you know, no matter what you can say, you can dismiss Trump, not listen to him, then he start off with a big idea, then he'll pull back and everything will be kind of fine. But actually, it's not kind of fine. Like, we do have 10% tariffs still, you know, and then every now and then, if we don't get what he wants, you know, he'll give
more tariffs. All of the threats that we, not so much threats, but all of the warnings were that you can't have volatility and instability, that global economies require predictability, that markets require predictability. Yet, markets continue to truck on. The stock markets are doing well internationally. There is money still flowing.
The resilience so far, but it's about long-term investment. So again, for some companies, it won't matter. They can deal with that up and down. But for companies who are deciding to build new pharma plants in Ireland, maybe, or deciding to do new things, I think there could be a lot of impaired decision-making just at the moment in terms of longer-term planning. And that's a real worry.
53106, if you want to get in touch, or 087-1400-106 on WhatsApp. There is a medical story that I wanted, Rona, to get your expert view on, which is, this is a study done in Irish hospitals that shows that laughing gas, which apparently is one of the more popular recreational drugs, nitrous oxide in small canisters, is being found to cause spinal cord damage.
So obviously nitrous oxide is very familiar gas to obstetricians because we use it in the labour ward for pain relief, and it's a very good form.
What's that with the gas?
Nitrous oxide and oxygen, but it's used with oxygen. And it's very safe when it's used under supervision. And so we've used it for a long time, but you're using it in a very short-term basis in a labour. What we're really talking about here is the long-term use of nitrous oxide. So I suppose the drug itself tends to make you feel calm, a bit euphoric, a bit giggly, a bit happy, and hence its use in recreation. Now, it's been used in recreation since the 1800s. And in fact, that's probably how it came into medicine. I'm not sure which came first. But like everything, if you take it in too much and if you into the toxic range, you can have psychosis, you know, hallucinations, seizures, cerebral damage, death. But it's the long-term use that they're really kind of getting at here. And that's because when we use nitrous oxide in the long term, it interferes with our absorption of a very important vitamin, vitamin B12, which is really critical to our neurology system. So to our brain, to our spinal cord, to our nervous system. And so this can ultimately cause paralysis, nerve damage. And this story is about spinal cord degeneration. And obviously some of this becomes irreversible. So early symptoms might be things like tingling in hands. And then you're talking about maybe lack of balance, but long-term loss of motor function, cognitive delay. There are other, you know, heart defects as well. And
this has been seen in Irish patients currently.
This has been seen in Irish patients because, again, people, again, as always, using it too much and using it for a long time. And I think also there's a broader issue of just drug use in general. You know, we're seeing big increases in drugs, and we're seeing different drugs coming onto the market. And that's got to be a real worry in terms of health. So, I mean, the message here is nitrous oxide is perfectly safe. We're using it in a one labour, but in the long term, if you're taking lots and lots of it over frequent periods, this will damage you and you could end up paralysed. And that's a really important message to young people out there. It is no laughing matter.
Particularly for something that is perceived to be...
It's perceived as being very benign. Exactly. And it really isn't. Yes. So big appeal. Just don't do it.
Final thing, Kevin, I want to get your journalistic view on this. You've spent decades dealing with all of the big and important stories. I'm sure you'll be able to cut through and find the truth at the heart of all this. Who's right, Brooklyn or David and Victoria? Because my God, there's some amount of column inches being dedicated to it this weekend.
Come on, look at all the serious stuff we've talked about. We need a bit of this. This is the most relatable thing the Beckhams have ever done. That's the truth of it. And that's why we're all so
into it. Whose side are you on?
Whose side? Okay, I currently, but I can swing, I'm currently with the parents.
Right.
But I think they've all handled it appallingly.
On what ground can you swing to be on Brooklyn's side of things?
What?
On what ground can you swing to be on Brooklyn?
Alec, we've all been embarrassed by our mothers at some stage at a wedding.
Yeah, but I mean, you don't
she went very far.
Instagram post about it. Do you know what I mean? One small whinge later that evening and move on with your life.
Yeah, I think what's really happened is that Brooklyn basically needed Brand Beckham, but now he has married into a family that make the Beckhams look like paupers. And so he doesn't need them anymore, so he can discard them. And that's why I find myself on the side of the parents. I suspect the parents used him from a very young age to be part of Brand Beckham and the perfect family, you know. But now it's kind of coming back to haunt them. So But like, life goes on. Victoria's out tonight. Well, I was reading in the Daily Mail.
On that positive note, yeah. Rona, I won't even lower you to ask you about your views on all this. Folks, thank you both very much. Rona Manny, consultant obstetrician and gynecologist, and Kevin Doyle, group head of news at Media House Ireland.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.